everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of the Mobilecast. We're here with episode 210, and we're at VMworld. And I am delighted to have my guest host, Ben Goodman, from VMware with me today.
Thank you for having me, Ryan.
And we are joined today by Tom Lunibus from Sosta. And Tom, why don't you introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about the company, and we'll get right into it.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. My name is Tom Lunibus. I'm the co-founder and CEO of a hot company called Sosta. Lots of folks know us for cloud testing, but we're one of the leaders in this new kind of emerging space around the digital performance management area that is very exciting for all the large digital brands going forward. Performance is probably matters more today than it has ever as you go direct to the consumers. A second of latency is actually millions of dollars of revenue in many cases. So great to be here.
Thanks, Tom. Tom, tell me a little bit about the history of Sosta, just because I knew a little bit of you when you were just cloud testing, but you and I met few years ago when you really got into mobile and, you hopped on that bandwagon pretty quickly, but how'd you get there? Where'd you start?
Yeah. I really appreciate that question because I think so many people, and this happens a lot in tech, and I've been doing this for now 38 years. So I'm one of the old guys. And I've been doing startups for almost 30 years. I've been fortunate to take two companies public or be part of the village that takes two companies public. A company called KnowledgeWare back in the 80s was led by Fran Tarkington around computer-aided software engineering and CASE, what we call the category we created called CASE. And then my team here took a company here at Sosta. We took a company public in 1999, a company called Sagent Technology. And Sagent was a server-side analytic play. So we compete against MicroStrategies and Business Objects and Cognos. But we also had a component that was an extraction capability that competed against Informatica. So we were unique in this play that we did both sides of that equation. And that's the secret really of Sosta, is that we're not just testing people or performance people. We're actually quants. We're a bunch of analytic guys, and we've been working on advanced analytics since really 1995. And our team built the first in-memory based analytic engine ever built, back in 2002. We sold that company to Oracle. And we've been advancing the paradigm of, analytics ever since. Sosta is really, an evolution of looking at a vertical implementation of analytics. We looked at performance as we all started going direct to consumer back in the early 2000s and what it would mean to go directly to the consumer in terms of the infrastructure, the network, the app, the user. This is kind of pre-mobile, so we didn't really have the issues of as many mobile devices as we have today. But we realized that to be able to understand latency, to understand a great user experience, a great consumer experience, it was going to be the ultimate big data analytic problem. And so we got really excited very early about it. One of the challenges on testing was to generate load, to simulate traffic hitting websites, especially the high traffic areas, the Olympic Games or Nike or an Apple. You need lots of servers. You may need literally a couple thousand servers to generate a few hundred thousand concurrent users. And that was a major problem because back in 2002, the largest test lab in the world, Jonathan Schwartz was on my board. He was running Sun at the time. And I would go to John and say, hey, could we use your lab? Well, that was a couple hundred servers.
Yeah.
And he had one of the largest labs in the world with Sun, and Microsoft had about 300 servers.
Novell had one of the largest, the super lab.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, the ability to, to simulate traffic hitting websites, not only from load, but also from multiple locations was a problem for us until 2007, I was introduced to Andy Jassy and a few other folks up in Seattle, and we began to see what we used to call grid computing, and IBM had a lot of different names to it, and I was introduced to this early concept of cloud computing, this access and availability and affordability of what we used to naively say infinite compute power. I used to jokingly say in speeches that I in those early days, I hit my head against the ceiling of infinite compute power on a daily basis. But we saw the possibility of using 1,000 servers for 6 hours to simulate amazing amount of traffic hitting a website. But ultimately, in the effort to analyze infrastructure, network behavior, application behavior, user behavior. So we were right team, right time, right place, right emergence.
Timing always has a lot to do with it.
And then from there, and then we instantly, Werner Vogels and I joke about it, we became kind of the killer app for cloud computing. Because back then, if you remember, most people's usage for cloud computing was one server. It was a dev guy needing a server. So
need to test something, you couldn't afford to get it in-house because it would take weeks, everything else. Go buy something from AWS, you're all set to go.
Well, a lot of guys were using cloud computing in the early days as a development platform, they only need one server. And so our use case of 100, we need 100 servers or 500 servers, and those kinds of things became a great story, and our customers were Hallmark and TurboTax. So we're enterprise customers were utilizing cloud computing for the first time around testing. And that became real hot for us. We became kind of iconic. But then the markets continue to evolve. It's not just websites. There's mobile. Sure. And so now you have the fragmentation of iOS and Android. And how do you test these mobile apps against these infrastructure and network kind of issues and a whole new plethora of things? And so we expanded our product from cloud, just being cloud test and this very large test platform that we built around the world. We cloud test now, our community provisions around 30 to 50,000 cloud servers on any given day, from 27 different cloud providers around the world. So it's not just Amazon. We use everybody's cloud servers because we need them all. And we need them different locations because we're simulating traffic from lots of different locations. But then our customers, some of our early customers like Verizon and Fidelity started saying, mobile, we got to get into mobile. So the ability to do not just load and performance testing, to do functional testing became
important. How do I test my app? How do I make sure it works? If I swipe here, what happens? And when you and I truly first met, that was what you were doing. That was unique. There were people who were playing around with it. There was one company I knew that actually they had a stylus you'd program and it would go and touch these devices sitting in racks. But why don't you talk about how you started and where you went with that?
I always love from an entrepreneur's standpoint not to have the original thought. I want the original thought to come from the market. And so it was for us. So we actually had this problem of load and performance testing alone before. But when Verizon and Fidelity and others came to us around functional testing, my first inclination was, well, there are a few tools out there that are already doing test automation around functional testing. So I don't necessarily have to reinvent the wheel all the time. So I literally went and partnered with them. There are companies like Perfecto Mobile and Device Anywhere that now is part of Keynote. And I actually partnered with Device Anywhere because I loved the demo, to be honest. And I thought the demo was really cool, the ability to build tests by using the app. And what we found very quickly was it just didn't function very well. It wasn't stable was the key to the marketplace. And this was true about all the first-generation products. And
having tried them, I will fully agree with you. It was not a fun experience.
So for us, I think we didn't. We weren't sure how big the market would evolve, but we definitely wanted to play in it. We partnered. We started really getting into the technical problems. So why is this not stable? And certainly the fragmentation of all the different versions of the OS, the screen sizes, all those things matter. But it was really their approach to building a test, and they had a very static approach. They literally would capture, from a technology standpoint, capture the test through an optical reader, a camera. And the problem with mobile, as both of you guys know, is that nothing is static in mobile. I mean, to get in most applications is a gesture, of a swipe.
And each different size fingers, different ways to do it. It's all the where do you touch, what do you touch, And it's also destructive testing. What if I touch over here in an app?
Well, in that, the location is actually a big, big deal. But every time you did one of those things, Brian, you break the test.
Broke the test.
And so the stability of the test was bad. So we, in our labs, went deep into it, and we've got brilliant guys, and we came up with an idea that, frankly, was being used in other areas. It was used in tagging of marketing sites, and so we embedded a library, or we embedded an agent into the object repository, and what we began to do is capture the test. So you build the test the same way, but you're capturing the test from inside the app. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, the precision of testing and the stability of the testing was changed forever. We called that product Touch Test. Touch Test is now the foundation. It's a standard for a lot of the mobile development platforms like Accelerator's Titanium product, Kony. It's a standard testing program for them. We're just signed up a Korean distributor yesterday, literally, and NTT is also a standard. So we've become kind of the standard platform because of stability and because of the precision of the testing format. So Touch Test has become very popular. So Cloud Test and Touch Test are our two testing products.
And then you have Mobile Pulse.
Mpulse, right? Yeah. Mpulse is that, again, comes from a customer, came from Walmart. A guy named Cliff Crocker. So they were using Cloud Test at Walmart, and Cliff came to us at, I had him speak at a tech conference that I put on every January. And one of the things he said is, you guys should go into the monitoring space. And we had looked at monitoring because we're quants, we're analytics.
When you have so much data, right?
We're capturing that. Actually, in Cloud Test, which is interesting, when you generate load, what we do when we do a cloud test is very much a collaborative environment. We're extracting data from other monitoring sources because we want to know what's happening to load balancers and databases. So we will extract from Wiley, Interscope, right, the CA product, or from Keynote or Gomez, or all these different monitoring tools, AppDynamics, New Relic. These are all partners of SOSTA. And so we extract. And I did, frankly, when Cliff made this comment, you know, I really didn't want to go into that space. I'm comfortable with some other vendor capturing data, and then I'm aggregating and correlating that data in memory onto the same timeline. That's the value of SOSTA. But Cliff introduced us to a whole new category that started to emerge. It's called real user monitoring, or what's, you know, the term RUM that comes from it. And I had never heard of it, to be honest. This was 3-4 years ago. And there were some open source tools like Boomerang and others that were being used. But most monitoring tools are actually capturing synthetic users. They're not actually capturing real world
usage and it's crowdsourcing to a certain extent, right? I
mean, exactly. And synthetic users are almost like a test without load.
Right.
They're like, you know, fake users going through the systems to check out load balancers and everything else. And the use case that came to us was, what we want is to capture every user that's on our website and our mobile apps real time.
Right.
Figure out what they're doing, figure out where the problems are, figure out what we're doing well. You know, especially with, you look at today, apps are built and rebuilt every 6 to 12 weeks. And in order to do that, you need that data.
Well, the perceptions, Brian, you know, for what to build are kind of, even to what to test, to be honest. We used to go in and say, what do you guys want to test? And they didn't really know what to test.
You don't know what you don't know, right?
Exactly.
But that's also the way they built apps. If you look at where mobile's been, mobile started with, we need a mobile app. Well, what should it do? Well, we have a website. And that's not necessarily the right answer, and it can't work the same way. And people didn't figure that out quickly. And products like you help them figure that out, to be fair.
It was one of those things that we didn't quite understand, to be honest with you. But we began to say, wow, my gosh, there's a blind spot here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and also synthetic was only capturing 1 or 2% of any kind of traffic or activity. So they really, it was like saying, Ben, you're important, but Brian's not important.
Right, right.
You know, I'm only going to do it, the 1%er, the 99%, 1%. So, when we asked, actually, when Cliff brought it to us, I said, well, so why do you think us? Why don't you go? He actually was a product manager for Keynote at one point. And he says, because your analytics are so advanced comparatively to everybody else out there, and you could scale to petabytes.
Sure, sure.
So we looked around. He introduced us to a company called LogNormal, and LogNormal, Boston-based firm. Philip Tellis, Buddy Brewer, great guys built this company. And their product Boomerang, which is the leading open source RUM product of back 3 years ago. but they didn't have a great analytic engine.
Well, I was going to ask, when they built their product, did they intend it to be a RUM product, or did it?
Yeah,
they did.
They did. They. I give them a lot of credit. Steve Souders from Google, a lot of credit. I think these are the guys that actually saw this. We need to capture really every user.
Let's turn every user into a tester.
These two guys, particularly, if you go to the Velocity conferences, they're gods. Because they really did kind of invent the category. Maybe I'm overstating it, but
they saw the writing on the wall before there was writing on the wall.
Absolutely. And it's still early days, but this is this is my hottest product, frankly, right now. It's enormous. We acquired LogNormal. We acquired Boomerang. In doing that, we built our analytic engines and put a very advanced data visualization. And today, every week, we're capturing and measuring over 3 billion user experiences for some of the largest brands in the world. And that probably will go up to about 10 billion a week in the next 6 weeks because of holiday readiness and things that will go on there. So it's an exciting time for us.
So I was going to actually wait to ask, but the way you put this together, what happens with iOS 9 and content blockers? I see Ghostery. I'm using Ghostery on my laptop actually right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing with that. More for the fact that I see all the trackers, including yours. And I've seen mPulse. I see 25, 30 of them. What's that do to your data? How do you solve that?
Well, there's a lot of different, one of the things about applications today is they're heavily instrumented. But those instruments are a lot of times based off silos. And so our own impact of performance, as an example, is very minimal. And we're able to understand the impact of any other tracker or any other tag. And a lot of them are marketing tags and things like that.
100%.
And so our ability to measure every element of the website. So we're not just page monitoring. We have a waterfall down to every element. So one of the big advantages of mPulse is to say, okay, of all the ads or all the services, what's the poorest performance, best performance? What is the latency? How is it contributing to the latency on the site? And those kinds of things. For us, data is all about correlation. It's about contextual intelligence. It's not about recording information. And for us, we're a big believer in DevOps, but we're a believer not in DevOps per se in the concept. We're a believer in process compression.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way you're going to get speed and agility, those great marketing terms, is to compress things like development and operations into one process, as DevOps has brilliantly done. Well, the other big element of correlation has to be between operations and business. So as an example, there is an enormous amount of monitoring tools for performance that are out there, and it tells you all kinds of things about latency and such, but they have no relationship to the business. And then there are tools like CoreMetrics and Omniture in the business side mm-hmm. that do modeling of customers but don't have any correlation to performance. So data, what we do, and essentially we break out all components to understand every element, whether they're monitors or components of the app, services of the app, or microservices of the app, as we're starting to see now. But we now are correlating the impact of that to business. So what does a millisecond on a website of latency mean to increase revenues or bounce rates or conversion rates and those kinds of things? And so it's a really interesting aspect of our business.
Something tells me that retail and e-commerce are going to, as far as mobile apps, are going to be very interested in you in the next few months. Just, I'll sort of hit back to content blockers, but if you can figure out what works and what doesn't work, and we've heard the term forever. If it takes more than 2 seconds to get to a website, people go off it.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with a mobile app. If my mobile app takes too long to come up, I close it and I delete it. And I think those things start to become very important.
Well, what we found, to me, it's one thing to capture 3 billion user experiences or 100 billion user experiences in the last year. It's what does it tell us?
Mm, yeah.
And probably the number one thing that it's told us is that we have on the back office side of the fence have instrumented billions of dollars of instrumentation and done a great job. team companies like VMware have done a really great job on that. But we haven't really instrumented the in points and the outside in. So what most of the latency is actually coming from outside. It's coming from the front end, sure, not the back end. And so you're going CDNs and other elements. So beginning to understand that and how do you optimize that? And then how do you dynamically optimize it while a customer is on a site? Now that's the holy grail. So to your point, they've already discovered us, but thanks for the point. Our customers include 39 of the top 100 brands, e-commerce brands in the world. And we are learning every day, which is the cool part of our business because there are so many new mobile environments. There's so many different operating systems. There's so many different screen sizes. We're not that far away from IoT. We're starting to look at IoT applications and testing IoT applications. And so there are literally billions of points of places where latency can hide inside of a mobile or IoT environment. And understanding that and finding the insight around that is our game. And it's just beginning right now. You know, I've been doing this for 38 years. You could tell I'm gray hair, been, you know, doing 6 startups and had some great success. I have never been more excited than I am today than in those 38 years. And I've seen mainframe to client server conversions. I've seen client server to web conversions. This is the most disruptive time of my life in tech, and it's just cool.
It's only going to get faster.
Right. It's only going to get better.
It's Moore's Law, just not in chips.
And if you're a forensic scientist, you know, I had this great conversation yesterday with one of the telcos. I won't name the names, but one of their advanced labs, the leader of one of their advanced labs. And he made a great statement to me. He said, you know, all this big data and data scientists all around. The problem with data science is there's not enough data.
Yeah. Oh, not enough data.
Not enough access to data.
Right. There's not enough access to data, and it's hard to figure out what data matters. You know, that
contextual intelligence.
Well, signal to noise ratio is a serious problem, right? Because and there's more as we create more and more data endpoints. IoT, your point of you know, mobile devices. There's just the volume of data goes up. So trying to figure out what matters is,
well, the thing that we see and the problem that we're solving is, or trying to solve, because it's a big problem, is that we have data, but we have so many little points of data that no one has correlated it together. Some of it's because of vendors competitive. I don't want to share my data with anybody else's data. Some of it is it's in silos inside of companies. So operation silos or dev silos or business silos. And they're just simply not correlated together. So you can't get that contextual intelligence, right, that is required to make it actionable.
Sure. And you could argue it's potentially going to get worse, right? Because as we spent a lot of time talking about this hybrid cloud stuff this week. And now we're talking about, you know, applications that are spread from on-premises to off-premises across multiple clouds, across multiple vendors with different platforms. And, you know, there needs to be something to bring it all together, right?
Well, that's, you know, that's a great point. You know, we kind of looked at it from that angle when we built the company. You know, we're a bunch of quants, right? Yeah. We're a bunch of analytics from our Sagent days. Well, instead of building a horizontal, you know, analytics platform, mm-hmm, we verticalized it to performance. Mm-hmm. So suddenly when you put a use case, and I've always said this about technology, is that you can't judge technology from the generic sense. You have to apply a use case, an app, a workload, to be able to fully understand the benefits of cloud computing. And you mentioned hybrid. Cloud testing is one of the great hybrid cloud applications. Yes. Now, is hybrid good for everybody? Maybe, maybe not. But in my case, it's essential.
Yeah, of course.
Because when I test, I use external cloud servers on the outside, yeah, to generate load to simulate traffic. But then we find problems. We go back in the lab,
yeah,
and we test inside the lab. So now we're doing inside. And then the next day, we want to test both ways because consumers are sometimes employees. And so you're actually wanting to simulate people inside firewalls and outside firewalls at the same time.
Employees are always your best customer. You can't sell to your employees you've already lost.
Absolutely.
Regardless of what the product is.
Yeah, it's just such a great, you guys, to a certain extent, you are exactly what you've built is the example of what hybrid should be and you know, really understanding where the right things to run things, take advantage of the intricacies of the individual platforms, right?
With absolutely no foresight to hire by the way. And again, that's why I say the great technologies are the ones that evolve from the problem.
Right.
And not say, hey, I want to build hybrid.
Technologies for technology's sake. Right?
And we don't go that way.
So you've been around for a long time. You've said it. I haven't been around quite as long as you, but I've seen a lot of it. And you must be seeing, I hate using correlation as much as we are here, but the correlation between what you've seen with cloud and what you're starting to see happen with mobile apps. And then you have mobile devices and the different types of devices you talked about, screen size, Android, iOS, you have Microsoft in there a little bit, and you have a few other people in there. How have you seen it progress? Because you have a different view than everybody else.
We have the most unique view. I mean, we've had it in cloud computing. And we've seen, to some extent, we have tested everybody's API in cloud. To some extent, we have seen both volume usage on the mobile side, whether it's Android or iOS or with Windows. We have a unique position. We've been hesitant about sharing that. You know, we don't like to, like on the cloud side of the fence, there are certain automation features of APIs in the cloud that some candidly suck.
Yeah, you know the skeletons in the closet.
We do.
Because you're in the closet with them.
Unfortunately, sometimes. And we battle it out and we help them out and we kind of move people along or try to move. But, you know, we've been agnostic about, you know, trying to say too much. Although, you know, I would say that Amazon's environment is their positioning is absolutely correct. It you know, when I first started, there was this term. I worked for a company called Burroughs back in the 70s, and in the mainframe days, it was a poorly coined, but IBM and the Seven Dwarfs, meaning that IBM had 80% of the market, right, and everybody else had broke up the rest, and Burroughs was one of those companies. It's a little bit that way still, although I would say with Amazon really has a leadership position on the cloud side, and Microsoft has done a great job of coming on, and especially around corporate and hybrid. I think they're making a lot of progress there. On the mobile sense, Android in many ways has been both a blessing and a curse. I mean, it's a blessing to Sosta. Because
a lot of business for you.
It does. Sure. You got it. The fragmentation, the lack of standardization around that, both is problematic in applying automation because it's almost impossible to fully automate in all the Android environments.
Well, a lot of people talk about Android like it's one thing, but the reality is it's not one thing, right?
It's a billion points of light. You know, it feels like at times.
Just looking at phones, forget other devices. It's over 1,000 different phones that are out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, IFA is this week.
Yeah.
So if you look at it, Huawei just announced a bunch of phones. Sony announced a bunch of phones. They're all coming out, which just add to what you have to do, all the new chips. And, you know, what must be interesting is seeing some of the data that comes in as Samsung comes out with their new chips, as Apple comes out with it. You know, if we stick with Android for a second, you have Intel, you have Samsung, you have a few others who are, you know, Qualcomm that are putting these chips together. It must be interesting looking at that data.
You know, what's really cool for us, because again, we create data because we do predictive analytics around testing. So we simulate, we're right now for lots of our customers simulating Black Friday and Cyber Monday. So, exactly. And we're taking data from last year, captured last year, and applying it and then applying a load. So we see a lot there, but we also capture a lot of data that's real time. And what we're learning for the bigger brands that have so many different mobile devices that you might have to, and you want every user experience to be good, we're able to tell them where most of their business is coming from. We're able to tell them which devices are used, which operating systems are more optimized, and how heavily they're used. And by doing that, it gives them insight to this point. You know, let's make sure our top 10% of our customers or our best customers that are using iOS or this particular type of Android device and or operating environment, we optimize that environment. So we're optimizing all the time, but it's hard to capture every device. To your point, Brian, you know, it is so fragmented, especially in Asia. And we have offices in Shanghai and Tokyo. It's it's almost impossible. Yeah. And so what we're careful about is, I think all of us in technology use automation with some hesitancy, because full automation is not yet there. And so I'm careful to make sure my sales guys don't go out and say 100% automation.
Oh yeah, we're just automate. Don't worry.
Mobile, you just can't do that.
No user is alike. You can aggregate them, but they're always, there are always those exoplanets out there that are doing something completely different.
Well, that's the cool thing. I mean, in today's world, you can begin to optimize the fact that the performance in New Zealand or the expectations of performance in New Zealand is completely different than New York. The size of the transaction matters. Is it a movie or is it a hotel room? That, you know, how long you feel the customer experience is good, depending on the size.
Trust me, I wish you worked with a lot of hotels.
So here's an interesting question. Are you guys looking, you know, we've talked how much how you're moving really beyond performance to experience, you know, mm-hmm. trying to really track experience and things like that. Have you moved to that next level of depth? So, you know, as a large retailer says, okay, I actually want to understand how people across different platforms are, you know, who's actually transacting with us? Who's a browser versus who's a buyer? Are you getting into that next level of depth to really help?
Even deeper than that, actually. Yeah. It's actually where conversion rates and bounce rates are kind of the theme there. So where do they bounce?
Right.
When do they convert? And so, you know, is performance related to that? You know, those things. So the ability, and we're in the process. So, you know, somebody logs in and then goes away. Somebody logs in and does search, then goes away.
Right.
Somebody logs in and searches, gets to the billing, goes away.
Yeah.
And the breaking down of the information of where, from an aggregate level, where people are falling out is hugely important.
I can imagine, right? So actually seeing if consistently you see people breaking out at a specific point, you know, maybe it's a UI issue, maybe it's a performance issue, maybe it's a...
Well, you know. Between that and the A-B testing that people, you know, have taken from the web and are starting to move into mobile.
Right.
Truly must make it interesting.
This is almost like ABCDEF testing.
It is. You know, what you begin to see as an example, airlines. Airlines understands that somebody using a mobile device uses their app differently. In other words, I book my flights on Southwest usually from my desktop.
Right.
My laptop. But I change my flight almost always in the cab using my iPhone.
Makes complete sense.
And so, I'm not going to make it there in time.
And so what they learned in that process is the changing of flights on the mobile app has to have, that
big
has
button.
To be big button. Exactly.
Yeah.
The other thing is that people begin to learn culturally where to put the button. So I spent a lot of time with some of the early developers about, is it really screen size in mobile that really matters? Is that the biggest problem? He goes, no, it's where you put the button. Because in the Eastern cultures, they read left to right or right to left. We Western left to right. So where on the page the button goes actually matters to the app itself. And so we are, you know, what testing kind of got narrowed into this, well, frankly, the bastard child of IT for years. But now as you go direct to the consumer, where there's $2 trillion done online every year through mobile devices and web devices. This is
and
big business.
And grow. And by the way, hockey sticking, right?
Oh, it's expected to be $10 trillion in the next 5 to 6 years. And so getting the button location right is something we help them with. Getting the understanding of this step to this step to this step is something that we help them with. This is big time bucks. This is not, you know, let's put the old stuff in the lab in the back. This is the revenue of a company, and what retailers will tell you is that brand loyalty today is defined this way. Six seconds.
So this is interesting from the perspective of you have an insight into UX that most companies would die for. I mean, we work with UX companies. I've worked with UX companies in the past, and when you're talking about user experience in a mobile app, and you have an insight and you can provide feedback that pretty much nobody else can.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Brian, because, you know, most of mobile apps, especially for enterprises, are outsourced. And they're a lot of times if they're
sadly marketing, so, but it's starting to move.
It's starting to move. And I'm encouraging that move for a control standpoint. And here's why. Because people that outsource are artists. They're design studios. They're about glossy pictures.
Yeah.
They're about, dynamic video content. All of those are performance problems.
Mm.
And if you don't understand performance and you're all about the pretty picture, then the brand is what loses.
Right.
And so that control thing, particularly to your point, Brian, is get control because your brand is performance and brand loyalty is about 6 seconds online right now. Well, so if you're using a lot of glossy pictures, you're going
to
kill it.
Well, I think it actually gets back to what you talked about before when you started talking about DevOps and, you know, the capability to iterate so quickly. If UX is so important and you've outsourced that, you effectively, to a certain extent, have broken down your ability to iterate quickly, right? Because if you have to go to the outsourcer, if you have to get, and the outsourcer uses glossy pictures and you find out that glossy pictures are slowing me down, affecting performance, how quickly can you iterate to fix that if you have to go external, right?
It's almost impossible. Yeah. You know, and also the thing that you certainly see this in Asia, when you outsource, you expect the testing is going to be done. Well, those guys aren't in a position to have the largest test platform in the world where you simulate traffic coming in.
You also get what you pay for. And
you got it.
When you are being competitive, testing falls out.
And I'm the funny thing about me running a testing company is I probably was the biggest one saying testing is the bastard child.
Right.
So, for 30 years. And it's a different world because we're going direct to the consumer. When I built an application 20 years ago, or my team built an application, my end users were employees.
Right.
So when that site went down or application went down, my users were affected, but my users were on my payroll, so sure, it didn't matter as much.
Your users were on your payroll, and they didn't have any other choices.
Right.
Well, I think there's also the other interesting thing was the company owned user to a certain extent because they were their employee, but they also own the desktop, they own the network, they own the server, right, they own the data center.
Right.
Now, the app's running on in the cloud, the network is Verizon, it's your own device.
We've come a long way in 10 years from Ramstat.
Right.
And from a performance standpoint, it's the wrong way.
Right.
From everything else, I'm a huge, huge fan on, but the reality is, it's about the brand. So it's not about speed of delivery completely. But every day, I used to give this speech that we used to and have had to for the last 35 years on a daily basis made a decision between speed and quality. Mm-hmm. In other words, we got to get this release out and it's got to happen today. Where do we cut? Testing always got cut.
Well, if you think about it, 35 years ago and even 10 years ago, I mean, I remember developing some stuff 10 years ago and it was, we have to get out the door. We'd set a deadline. We'd always miss the deadline because it was enterprise. We controlled the employees and the employees couldn't complain. If I can't get something out the door today, people talk about shadow IT. I like to call it shadow innovation. They go to the app store, they find an app that solves the problem for them and they use it.
Yeah.
And those pieces weren't there before.
The retailers have taught me kind of a thing that we think intuitively. They spent 100 years, some of my retailers, 100 years advertising to all of us consumers to get us off of couches and into cars to drive to a mall. And then customer service, even if it wasn't so good, they still bought it.
Right.
Today, with a mobile device, every consumer is 3 clicks away from buying the exact same thing from some other brand.
Yeah, they may be in your store buying from online.
Well, that's the interesting thing about mobile and retail and bricks and mortar versus mobile. Last Cyber Monday, 10% of Walmart's transactions were done mobile inside stores.
That's brilliant.
Because they were out of inventory.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so you just bought it online.
Years ago, I started buying stuff online Black Friday because they started putting the same things. You just had to know about it, and people did. It was much easier than getting up at 4 a.m.
And you were one of the smart ones.
Yeah, standing outside, by us, Ben and I actually don't live too far from each other. Circuit City was always better than Best Buy. Best Buy was just a madhouse.
And reason
Circuit City is no longer around. And, there was an article yesterday that Best Buy has actually turned it around. So you guys actually announced a deal with Accenture today, and I kind of want to give you a chance to get to it, but let's talk a little bit about Sosta as a company, where you are. You're a private company.
Yeah.
I still consider you a startup. So if you've listened to the podcast, I tend to push people a little bit about where they are in funding, what they're doing.
Yeah.
You just hired, to me, a great friend of mine, James Urquhart, who, great get for you, and just sort of where you're going, what you see. And then you can hit the Accenture deal sort of at the end of that.
We're in a different world. The two companies that I've been involved with going public, we raised $28 million and $32 million, and they both went public in 4.5 years. Today, Facebook, Twitter all took 10 years, and my competition has raised $150 million to $250 million. I, up until today, had raised $63 million. We're now $75 million.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But it, you know, comparatively, we're doing it old school. We're a little bit, we're a lot more efficient with it. I think that's experience in some ways. You know, I poo-poo experience a lot of times, but I think there's sometimes that you can do things differently today that you couldn't do 5 years ago. And so you can optimize around that too. We've been, you know, I've always felt this way, whether it's Sosta or anybody else. I've always felt that great companies will attract great people. And it's usually great technologies and customers that do it. James is, as with you, Brian, James is a long-term friend that I've always thought highly of, as there is so many in the Clouderati that
he was out in front of all of this, right?
Yeah. James is really a thought leader. Yeah. And so James is coming in to help us in significant ways. We've also attracted some really other big heavyweights within the Valley. So for a small company, it's really unique.
That's great.
But we've also, you know, great companies attract great people. Great people attract great partnerships. And today we're announcing that Accenture has become a significant partner. So we've had other partners, but Accenture, Paul Daugherty, the CTO of all of Accenture, and I have come to an agreement on a global distribution. They are going after the digital performance management space themselves. They see our platform as the play, the face of that going forward. We're thrilled to have the 366,000 employees of Accenture pushing Sosta's products around the world. But you know, we share the same things. They're big. Their agendas are cloud computing, digital, and new advanced technologies. And we're right in the middle of it. And it's not about technology. It's about performance for them. Sure. And how do you deliver, you know, they're repositioning companies like Pizza Hut. You know, how do you transform or disrupt Pizza Hut into a whole new business around slices, as an example? And so, you know, we are a really strategic play. And for the first time in our history, we took an investment from one of our strategic partners. And
that's exciting.
And that's it, to have Accenture want to make a significant investment in Sosta, that's a big deal.
But they put their money where their mouth is, right?
They did. And that goes a long way. And it wasn't us encouraging them to do it. They wanted to do it. So it's very cool. We're very excited.
You know? How big are you? I mean, having Accenture is huge, but I'm just curious how many people you guys are.
About 250. You know, we are offices around the world in China and Japan and London and, you know, all the traditional locations. We have engineering.
Everybody's building something somewhere.
Yeah, you know, we've most of our engineers are in the Silicon Valley in Mountain View, California, where we're headquartered, but we have a really cool team. If you look at our data visualizations, which we're known for, where they're aesthetically awesome, we have a crew in London that is, they're actually out of the movie industry. So,
oh, cool.
They did a lot of advanced visualizations of that. For us, understanding data starts with being able to understand visually.
Makes the data.
So the globe matters, being able to see users. That's a user in Des Moines versus Florida. Those things mm-hmm. all matter. When you're trying to get contextual intelligence, you need vision to kind of pull together location, you know, good, bad sure. experiences, those kinds of things. And so, you know, I'm really proud of our team. I love this market, but I love this team. I think some of it's because it's the getting the band back together again. It's the old Sagent team together again. And so it's been a lot of fun for all of us.
That's great.
Being what you do, and we could probably talk for 2 or 3 hours, and I don't think my listeners would appreciate that. But where do you see it going? So as sort of we start to wrap up here, where do you see, let's focus on mobile a little bit more in the cloud, but where do you see mobile going from what you guys see, and how do you fit into that and then, you know, kind of tie it all together with your digital performance piece?
Yeah, I think the markets are going to continue to evolve around ease, you know, and convenience. I mean, whether it's wearables, you know, and while wearables have had some false starts with Google Glass and other things, you know, applications and how we move and live. I think mobile is going to be more about how we live. Each one of us lives differently. So whether it's wearables or we start seeing, you know, big data kind of analytics, hovering gestures like Minority Report kind of elements coming into play.
That's what I was thinking of when you talked about your data visualization. I was thinking of Minority Report a little bit.
Well, you know, even when, you know, one of our customers is Atos, the guys that do the Olympic Games. And so, you know, we have a 10-year contract there. So we're looking at what kind of mobile apps will we be testing in 2020 in Japan? And, you know, pretty sure that we're going to be testing applications that are driverless cars moving athletes around venues or all the logistic elements of moving all those people from venues to venues. So that, you know, for us, that's the exciting part is what will we be testing in 2020, 2024? IoT is becoming very prevalent for a lot of our customers. And so IoT is very much part of it. So hovering gestures, wearables, you know, IoT are all part of it. What will it be called? We don't care. we just want to make, we know it's going to be all around the customer experience. And that's really what it's all about for us, improving the customer experience, whether it's performance, functionality, or measurement of all of this. That's the whole gig for us is improving because there's dollars, trillions of dollars behind that customer experience.
Okay, great. And so if people want to learn even more about SOSTA, you're on the web at www.sosta.com, which is...
Spell it.
I'm going to spell it. S-O-A-S-T-A.
Correct.
.com.
Correct.
You're also on... You're personally are on Twitter.
Yes.
As well as the company.
At Lunibus, L-O-U-N-I-B-O-S. And SOSTA is also a Twitter handle. We have some great blogs. Tammy Everts has a Beacon blog that is awesome for insights and frankly, great insights around mobile and things that, you know, metrics that are really meaningful. So I encourage everybody to follow Tammy, because that she's golden in the performance view, but they're great business metrics to look at. So, come see us, you know, we have lots of videos out there. Come reach out to us in any way, shape or form. And we're happy to tell our stories.
And Tom is also hugely accessible on Twitter. So he's not one of those executives that just signed up and, you know, to tweet marketing messages. You know, he's very accessible on Twitter. So
it gets me in trouble. Yeah. I'm a little bit more marketing than I used to be. My personal opinions had to be diminished a little.
You and I have been following each other on Twitter for years. So yeah, okay. We've all calmed down a little bit, mostly.
Well, the discussions are always fun. I mean, when you get the cloud roddy going, it's a lot of fun to, you know, as I said this earlier this week, let's pass the platform.
Yeah, especially with James, you know, love to wind James up and, you know, get him going, then kind of step back and watch what happens. So.
He's awesome.
So, Tom, thanks for appearing. Ben, thanks for guest hosting with me, and that has been episode 210. Thank you, listeners, and we got a bunch more coming from VMworld this week.